think she left some of her documents here.
Okay, go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. May it please the Court, I'm Lisa Brodiaga from San Benito, Texas. I'm here on behalf of Petra Salinas, also from San Benito, Texas. I'm not going to go into the procedural history very much because it's very long and it's been before the Court before, but I would make one observation on that, and that is that there was one disastrous event in the lifetime of Petra Salinas, and that was in 1992 when she agreed to let somebody accompany her to Florida, and they were stopped and marijuana was found in the car. She has had no problems since then. She had no problems before that. She's otherwise lived an upstanding life. The primary question before this Court is whether after Vartelis this Court can require a person who is challenging the application of the repeal of Section 212C to themselves to show reliance on prior law in structuring their conduct. Now, formulating the question that way, it becomes almost self-evident because that's almost a direct quote from Vartelis, where the Court said that the government acknowledges that we have never required, this Court has not required a party challenging the application of a statute to show he relied on prior law in structuring his conduct. But the government does not appear to believe it is self-evident, so we are stuck with that issue. The second problem is that the government has declined so far to take a position on the substantive issue in this case. What they say is that, first of all, they couldn't say what either the Board of Immigration Appeals or the Department of Homeland Security would say about the application of Vartelis to this case. And when I pointed out that, well, I don't think the Department of Homeland Security is your client, did they? Because they had said that, you know, all we know about them is that they concur with our decision to counsel's decision to seek a remand in a way that made it sound like they were their counsel. And then they said, well, we can't tell what the BIA is going to think. We can't go around polling the individual members, and we don't know what the Attorney General thinks either, even though he is our client. And they relied on U.S. XREL Accardi versus Shaughnessy in saying that it would be improper for the Attorney General to take a position in this case, whereas in Accardi, what the Attorney General did was he intervened in a pending case before the BIA by issuing a list of people who were considered undesirables, and that list included the person whose case was before the BIA. This case is not currently before the BIA. This is not a new issue, as the government claims. This issue has been presented. Ms. Salinas has taken this position before the BIA twice and before this Court also. So it's not a new issue. It's a question of new authority supporting an old issue. And to say that the Attorney General cannot give an opinion on the effect of new authority on an old issue because he has to wait for the BIA under Accardi makes no sense whatsoever. And that is particularly true since the issue involved retroactivity, this Court has held innumerable times, is not something on which the agency would receive deference. The Court has said that this is a question of law, just as would be the statute of limitations, and we do not defer to the agency opinion on that. So there would be no point in asking the BIA or going back to the BIA to find out their opinion, because their opinion in the end wouldn't matter, because that would be this Court's determination. And I guess understanding that their excuse about Accardi would perhaps not fly, they said, well, we will give you our preliminary view, our preliminary opinion as to the impact of Vartelis. And what they did was basically say Vartelis doesn't change anything, that this Court can still require her to show reliance. And they got to that result by making three very fundamental errors. First of all, they focused solely on the question of the considerations in making the ultimate decision. And those considerations are considerations of of whether there has been reliance is one of them, whether there has been, I have those here, but the primary one they relied on was the question of reliance. But that's a consideration that goes to the underlying issue, and the underlying issue is whether or not the retrospective application of this statute has genuine retroactive impact. And that the Supreme Court held in Vartelis.
Well, that's the question of whether it attaches new legal consequences.
It attaches new legal consequences to events that have already passed. That is the underlying question. That is the primary issue. And the government does not address that. Rather, they consider whether or not there has been reliance. And even on that score, they misunderstand the concept of reliance as the Supreme Court has used it. And this is true both in Vartelis and in St. Cyr. The Supreme Court did not require in either one of those cases, or has it in the past, and they acknowledged that in Vartelis, they have never required that the individual show reliance. Reliance as a consideration is the potential for reliance, the possibility for reliance, because they're looking at things in a global manner. When you decide whether a new law has retroactive impact, you don't say, well, it might have it on this person and it might not on the other. And they quote the Third Circuit decision in Ponapula, where the Third Circuit says it's a strange presumption indeed that depends on a showing of actual reliance. And this court essentially held in Carranza de Salinas I that there is that potential for reliance. There are at least two forms of potential reliance. When a person, such as she, goes to trial and is convicted and waives appeal of the verdict. One form of reliance is that, as she was, you had the possibility of still applying for 212C relief because her sentence was only for probation. So she'd been a permanent resident for more than 7 years. The court gave her probation. So there is a tremendous potential for reliance of a person at that point to say, well, there's no, the possibility of winning an appeal is not worth it because I'm still eligible for 212C relief, so I'm not going to spend all that money. My lawyer says the chances of winning it are not that great. There is also the potential for reliance that this court found in Carranza de Salinas 1, and that was the probability or the possibility that someone might wait to apply for discretionary relief with the district director based on the fact that they can always do so before the immigration judge, and that gives them the opportunity to show more rehabilitation. So that was the potential for reliance that caused the court to remand this case the first time to give her an opportunity to show that she was actually reliant. And she was not able to do that. She's one of these people who gets up in front of a court and her mind goes blank. In fact, I think even in the record it says somewhere, I can't think, my mind is blank. And things that she was able to remember in her attorney's office, she was not able to remember when she got in immigration court. So she was not able to meet that burden of showing she actually relied. But under Vartelis, she doesn't have to actually rely. The fact that the court gave her the chance to prove it shows that the court understood that the possibility, the potential for reliance was there. And that is really all that Vartelis requires. Now, the first part where they said it's limited to considerations of fair notice, reasonable reliance, and settled expectations, and did not get to the ultimate question, which is the classic formation of justice story, that was one of the areas where there was a dissent in Vartelis. The dissent in Vartelis questioned whether Justice Story's formulation of when there is retroactive impact is actually the proper way of going about it. But that was three members of the Supreme Court and six persons on the Supreme Court said that, yes, it is ultimately a question of whether there's a new disability in this case, a new disability attached to prior events. And that was exactly the issue in Bartelis, that they were arguing that a new disability had been attached to prior events. In that case, it was the disability of not being able to travel without being stuck on the way back, not being able to engage in international travel. But the underlying part of Justice Story's formulation still holds. And the second part on the role of reliance, there was no dissent in Bartelis. The Bartelis did not have a problem with the fact that you do not need to show actual reliance. Not even the dissent questioned that. That was, and the government didn't question it. The government acknowledged that the court had never required that. And if you go back and read St. Cyr carefully, you will realize that it was not required in St. Cyr either. And in fact, in St. Cyr, as we showed in our opening brief, the individual did not rely. You can go back to the Second Circuit decision there, and you will find out that that was something that they came up with, the possibility of reliance, not because there had been any reliance on his part. Now, the third aspect where the government's preliminary view is seriously flawed is in the question of identifying the pertinent event by which retroactivity is judged. Because it's retroactive with respect to what? And this area also had a dissent, because in Bartelis, the Supreme Court found that the event that caused the disability, namely either the commission of the offense or the conviction that resulted, and they said for these purposes the two are the same, was the pertinent event by which you judged retroactivity. And the dissent, partly because of their disagreement also with Judge Story's formulation, said, no, that's not how you do it. How you do it is going back to the questions of fair notice and reasonable reliance and settled expectations, and that here the statute is directed at the act of returning to the United States, which occurred after the change in law, so therefore there's no retroactive impact. Well, that was the third aspect. The government didn't even attempt in this case to come up with a proposed alternative event as being the key event which would cause or by which you would judge whether or not there was retroactivity. Ms. Salinas asserts that the key event is either the conviction itself, which is the conviction that caused her ultimately to be deportable and to be eligible for 212C relief, and then once IRA-IRA came along, to no longer be eligible, according to the government, if it is applied retroactively. Or it could be viewed as her decision to waive appeal. And the decision to waive appeal is very similar to the decision to plead guilty, and the BIA has allowed that decision, even before the actual plea, to be considered sufficient to bring a person under the protection of St. Cyr if it happened prior to April 24th of 1996. So here, all of the events by which you could judge retroactivity occurred prior to 1996, and the government does not challenge that, so we take that pretty much as established. We believe that under Bartelis, it's clear that actual reliance can no longer be required. We believe that there is absolutely no point in remanding the case to the BIA without settling these issues. It could have a serious problem because, as the government admits, the BIA might find that reliance was still required, and that would be quite plausible, given that there is a published decision out there with her name saying it's required. If it's just remanded with nothing, the board might very well feel they are still bound by the published decision. So we consider that it's very important for this court to settle the issue once and for all. It's irrelevant what the board would think anyway, so why bother to send it back?
Okay, thank you, ma'am. We've got some time left for rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Zanbordina. Did I pronounce your name anywhere close?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the Court. This case involves the petitioner who testified that she was not aware that 212C existed prior to these matters arising, and whose own counsel concedes that her case would have unlikely to have succeeded had she appealed the case. She insists, however, that these fact pattern offends the Landgraf test to such a degree that retroactive application of the statute would be impermissible. The Vardalos decision did not issue a Vardalos test. There is no St. Cyr test, in a sense. There is Landgraf. And Landgraf made clear that the notion is judges considering each case on a case-by-case basis after a series of hard questions. The shortcut to Landgraf has been proposed today, which is to say, if there is some new provision which attaches legal consequences to a past event, that is enough. But then that runs counter to Landgraf itself without Vardalos actually saying that's what it's attempting to do. We think instead what Vardalos was doing was adding more to the calculus that is involved with Landgraf.
Well, they had a strange way of saying that, if that's what they intended. I mean, they clearly say that the court has never required proof of reliance.
Right, Your Honor. But in this case, Landgraf also noted when Landgraf first came out that it was an issue of fair notice, reasonable reliance, and settled expectations. What's happened, we think, is that the court has pointed out that as judges weigh out whether or not a statute should apply retroactively, an alien can, if they wish, or a litigant could present evidence of actual reliance, which would aid their case, but the failure to do so doesn't necessarily end the issue either, because reliance is not a simple shortcut in the entire matter. The conclusion that a statute operates retroactively, impermissibly retroactively, comes at the end of a process. It comes at the end of a process considering the nature of the charge, the extent of the distance between the event and the new rule.
Well, all right. Under Vartelis, is actual reliance required or is it not required?
Well, under Vartelis, what it points out is that if an alien presents actual reliance, that can aid their case as they try and show that they meet the Landgraf test. But if an alien does not, it does not penalize them. In fact, Vartelis laid out that aliens may still have reasonable reliance that they could demonstrate as within their case.
All right. So what I hear you saying, although you say it in a much longer way, is that the answer is no. Vartelis says that actual reliance is not required.
Vartelis would point out that if an alien didn't show actual reliance, they would not be penalized for that. But again, these are harder questions that the Supreme Court made clear in Landgraf, in which Vartelis, if it was attempting to reduce Landgraf to a simple matter of comparing an event and a new rule, it would have actually stated that it was attempting to reduce Landgraf by doing so. One of the things Landgraf pointed out that were permissible events to be applied retroactively was an intervening statute affecting prospective relief. Now, at the time, petitioner was seeking prospective relief here. She was seeking eventually to apply for something, but there was no pending application for 212C. The court in Landgraf noted that if every statute, in a sense, every new law does affect some past event, or it affects someone who might otherwise have wished to do something. And the Supreme Court pointed out that to always rule that a new law could not affect a past event would be to essentially ossify the law. And that's at Landgraf footnote 24. And in that same footnote, they're describing, at page 273, the notion of prospective relief being one of the examples that would not be required to say that a statute was improperly retroactive. It's unlikely that the court in Vartelis intended to change the calculus without addressing its analysis in INS versus St. Cyr. In the St. Cyr decision, that met Section 212C head on. Section 212C was the central point. In Vartelis, the statute involved the definition of admission, which is at 8 U.S.C. 1101A13, and whether or not that section could be applied retroactively. The Supreme Court had already discussed Section 212C's retroactive application in INS versus St. Cyr. It's unlikely the court in Bartlett would have sought to do away with that without saying it was doing so. This court should not abandon the St. Cyr analytical framework, which addresses the exact statute here and lays out a sensible framework for analyzing the issue. For Bartlett to have obviated the reasoning and analytical approach to St. Cyr without saying that it was doing so is a logical stretch, we think, on petitioner's part. Petitioner would have this court then believe that the Supreme Court in INS versus St. Cyr went through a complicated analysis deciding whether or not someone had given up a constitutional right or not and whether or not that reliance was impermissibly retroactive, when it could have simply taken the shortcut that petitioner says Varlas has now reduced Landgraf and St. Cyr to by saying a new statute has affected a past event.
Did the new provisions of IRA-IRA attach new legal consequences to this conviction that was completed before the enactment of IRA-IRA?
Well, she was removable before and after the offense. So the question of removability stayed the same. And in fact, in Vardalus and St. Cyr, you actually had a constitutional right that was affected.
Yeah, but she was eligible for Section 212C relief before IRA was enacted. Is that right?
Yes, sir. She was eligible for a discretionary waiver.
Exactly.
Section 212C.
That's what she wants now, as I understand it.
Right. And Your Honor, the Supreme Court in both Vardalus and St. Cyr pointed to giving up a constitutional right. In St. Cyr, the alien gave up a constitutional right to trial with the expectation that a form of relief would be waiting for him at the time. And then it was taken away. The Supreme Court noted that at pages 321 to 322 of their decision in St. Cyr and found that to be a compelling point. In Vardalus, we again have a constitutional right implicated, the right to travel, where the court again says that it is improper for someone who is having a constitutional right affected. In this case, it's a discretionary waiver that the individual was seeking, and was for a prospective form of relief. The application wasn't pending at the time that IRIRA was passed. Vardalus also discussed reasonable reliance on the petitioner's part. The Supreme Court noted that Vardalus, at the time of his plea, likely relied on then-existing immigration law, because this adds to the calculus. While a party is not required to show reliance, that they're not required to show actual reliance, in answer to your question, Your Honor, but the implication there was that if an alien could show or demonstrate some form of reliance, that would add to the calculus that judges would engage in, to the hard questions that Landgraf laid out would have to be taken into consideration.
Well, it seems to me what they're saying is once a petitioner shows that new legal consequences attached to events that were completed before the enactment of this new law, you've made out your case. It may strengthen the case if you show reliance, but you've made out your case. I mean, isn't that what it says?
Well, Your Honor, again, the Supreme Court in a shorthand version has described that, but they did so they've described a successful claim for impermissible retroactive effect in that sentence, but they did so without acknowledging Landgraf calculus that had been laid out and was built upon by St. Cyr. Again, petitioner is suggesting that the court wiped that away without saying it was doing so, which, again, we think in what Varlas was trying to get across in a separate statute was that the individual was, because this individual who had successfully demonstrated improper retroactive effect had shown that a new statute had attached legal consequences to something that was a constitutional right at the time, the right to travel. Again, petitioner is arguing that the Landgraf test, for all its reliance on judicial inquiry and the balancing of factors, has been reduced to the shortcut of new legal consequences to events completed before its enactment. This oversimplifies Landgraf and does not afford weight to each case, whether Landgraf or St. Cyr. Nor did Vardalus acknowledge it was making such a sweeping change.
Let me ask you this. I mean, in the Third Circuit case, Ponapula, the change there was in discretionary relief from deportation, was it not?
I believe so, yes, Your Honor.
There's no constitutional right in that case that was implicated.
Correct, Your Honor, although here we have an actual individual who, again, we have an attenuated situation where the individual is convicted in 1993 and then spends years taking no action whatsoever and then says that this statute actually applies to me.
Yeah, but don't you think Vitalis makes it clear that the event that we focus on is the conviction?
Well, the event may be the conviction that we focus on, Your Honor, but again, the question is it's not simply, we think, just to say that new consequences are attached to a past event without reading out most of Landgraf and the analysis that was laid out in St. Cyr.
They cited, Supreme Court cited Panopoulos with approval.
I understand, Your Honor, but in each case, which is why the Landgraf instructs that it's a case-by-case analysis. In this case, we have an individual who had spent years and offered no evidence whatsoever to buttress her case, even as to reasonable reliance, that she took any steps whatsoever. We have literally someone who did nothing and took no action, stating that this is an improper retroactive effect. In Varlas, again, the petitioner's right to travel was implicated, a constitutional right. In St. Cyr, the constitutional right to trial was given up. Here, there was no pending application, so there was no vested right that was waiting for petitioner at the time. She did not have any pending application.
Was there a vested right in Panopoulos, the Third Circuit case?
I'm drawing a blank on that, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
You have discretionary relief in that case also.
And the question, however, Your Honor, again, is years in the past. This is a matter of years in the past, someone who offered no evidence whatsoever that she was seeking to build equities, which isn't necessarily reliance. It's simply a matter of taking any kind of steps. It wasn't a matter of offering some sort of calculus that she feared waiving appeal or the consequences of that. Literally, who offered nothing and simply says, this falls strictly, we think, under the footnote 24 of Landgraf about ossification of the law, that you have an individual who can simply say, a statute has been passed in the future that affects something I wish to do in the past, I expected to do in the past, and I want that statute not to apply. The Supreme Court in Varlas pointed out that one of the problems was going to be for aliens who were helpless to undo an action. And there was no action here for petitioner to undo. It wasn't, again, that she was arguing that she gave up a right to trial. It was the notion that she literally took no steps to do anything. And again, we think, applying the Landgraf calculus, that the inaction on petitioner's part, coupled with the distance from the conviction to the repeal of Section 212C, would warrant against petitioner's argument here. Regarding the actual right to jury trial, again, petitioner did not proceed and go to jury trial with any sort of implication that she was doing so expecting Section 212C relief. And this Court noted in Carranza 1 that that was not a valid basis to claim improper retroactive effect. Again, there's been a persuasive argument that this Court found in Carranza 1 against finding impermissible retroactivity on the basis of an applicant's decision to go to trial. It doesn't speak to the reliance analysis, but again, this is the analysis to postpone the decision. What petitioner, again, has sought to do is read out much of Landgraf. Sorry.
You rely on Landgraf, and you essentially are saying that Vartalis added nothing to Landgraf.
No, Your Honor. We're saying that Vartalis shows where an alien can be aided by a decision, where an alien can be aided by presenting certain evidence. An alien can present evidence. If an alien does show actual reliance, that can do anything but help. The government cannot use that as a cudgel to argue against saying that there was no retroactive effect. But if Varlas had meant to reduce the Landgraf test, which is supposedly a hard, difficult test for judges to take into account various things, including reasonable reliance, it would have said, we think, that it was doing so. And likewise, the exact statute issue here, St. Cyr, was not mentioned by the Court in Varlas as saying that they were reducing that analysis. Again, the Court went through an exhaustive analysis in St. Cyr regarding retroactivity when, if all that was a matter of just saying that there was a new statute that affected past conduct, they could have been over and done with it. But instead, what Varlas does is it adds to the calculus. It adds more factors for judges to take into account as they decide whether or not a new statute attaches improper legal consequences.
What is the test now, then, after Vartalis?
Well, we think it still remains with Landgraf, which is the idea that you have fair notice, reasonable reliance, and settled expectations, and which, again, was not mentioned by the Supreme Court as being taken away, but is instead another point that we think judges would add in when they weigh this out. If petitioner had shown even reasonable reliance, for some reason, that anything to implicate either reliance on the future availability, anything to show preparation, anything that might add something other than making an attenuated step. Because the minute we get back into the situation where it's simply a new statute attaches some legal consequence to something in the past, we run smack into the warning that Landgraf gave to us about ossification of the law.
So you're saying that potential reliance is not enough?
Well, we're saying that in each case, it's a matter of these are hard cases, Your Honor. So it's a matter of looking at each situation, and if an alien might have relied, we don't think that's enough. An alien could help themselves by showing actual reliance, but this would certainly be the bottom rung, we think, because here the alien admittedly has not shown a thing, and so has sought to reduce and read out much of Landgraf to that simple test, which, again, the Supreme Court could have done in Landgraf. The Supreme Court could have done that in St. Cyr, but it did not.
This question asks for you to be slightly repetitious, but a minute ago you made the statement that Vartelis adds some elements, that was in the plural the way you said it, to the calculus. So could you list again for us what you think those elements are that Vartelis added to the calculus?
What we think is that Vartelis pointed out that if an alien may show actual reliance, in other words, an alien can use actual reliance to help their case as judges weigh out whether or not a statute was improper. But the government cannot necessarily say the absence of reliance also ends the inquiry. There's no shortcut here when evaluating reliance. It's something that would help the alien in this case, in any case where you try to weigh out the retroactive factors, but it's not something the government can then turn around and use against the alien. But in this case, what we have is a petitioner who, for instance, when making the decision to appeal the conviction and has admitted that it would be unlikely to succeed, engaged in no quid pro quo. Again, did not give anything up when made the decision not to appeal the decision. There was no action required on petitioner's part that she might say, I wish to undo, which the court noted in Vartelis was one of the things that aliens seek to do. One last thing I will just touch on regarding the motion to remand. The reason this position, and we term it preliminary, is because we don't know, this issue was pending before the board in at least two cases and possibly other ones. And so the question is, if the board rules on it and rules a different way, depending what circuit that happens in, then that is what the position this office would take. The board is entitled to make their decision free of any sort of influence from elsewhere in the Department of Justice. Those are independent adjudicators.
But it's not up to the board to decide a question of retroactivity. That's for the courts.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That is a de novo question. We understand that. Our concern is rooted in policy, because if the Attorney General is taking a position before the board has even touched this issue, this is, to our knowledge, this is the leading case, the case that's most advanced on the question, then there may be an implication that the Attorney General is somehow trying to telegraph to independent adjudicators, this is what I want you to do.
All right, but even if the Attorney General doesn't take a position, we can take a position, and we decide it in this case, then it's decided and it binds the board, at least as to this case, right?
It would. If the board issued a published decision and it went the other way, there may be a Brand X type issue if the board did a published decision after this court issued a decision, but likely the usual choreography would be that if this court issued a decision, the board would abide by that in this circuit and then apply its decision elsewhere. But obviously the goal of the board is national uniformity. And so what motivated this was, in this particular case, under these circumstances, our indication was to let the board have the first crack at it. For all we know, the board would have ruled in favor of Ms. Kranzer. We don't know. Because we're not trying to contact the board and find out what they would have done in each case.
But you say let the board have the first crack at it, but you don't mean let the board have the first crack at the question of retroactivity, do you?
Well, because of the circumstances of this case, we thought it best to send it back to the board. And we say have the first crack at it, meaning that the board would first tackle the questions arising in this case and make a ruling. They may not issue a published decision in this case if they saw it first. They may issue an unpublished decision. We're not sure what they would do. So it's just the idea of letting them make a decision without the Attorney General somehow trying to telegraph or otherwise indicate this is what you should do, because that, again, is what we saw in Accardi, where we have the Attorney General who has ceded his authority to the board, essentially trying to tell them what to do on this particular case.
Yeah, but you're the board was in the middle of deciding a case. I don't see the connection between that and what's going on here.
Well, because the issue is before the board in numerous cases. There are both cases that are pending before the board. There's cases that are being remanded out of circuit courts. remanding a case out of a, or moving to remand a case out of a circuit court because of a new intervening authority is usually a fairly ordinary event on the, on our part, where we allow the board, in the interest of national uniformity, to
take. What cases do you have with this issue before the board now?
Sorry, if I can just answer the.
Yeah, what cases do you have before the board now that involves a retroactivity issue?
Well, we know that in the Ninth Circuit and the Second Circuit, cases involving application of Vardalus have been remanded to the board. So presumably they would have to make decisions on that. I suspect this court and just this case is more advanced along trying to reconcile Landgraf with Vardalus than the board is, since those cases were just recently remanded.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Borgiega, back to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Taking things sort of in reverse order, they say that there are no decisions that Ms. Salinas would undo if she had the opportunity. Well, I can think of at least two. There's her affidavit in the record and her testimony saying that if she had even suspected that pleading guilty was crucial to maintaining her ability to apply for relief, she would have at least pled no contest or worked out some kind of a plea. And would have done so to maintain her eligibility for relief. The fact that her chances of winning an appeal were slim does not mean they were non-existent, particularly since the co-defendant had originally stated that she was not involved, and it was only when he learned his potential sentence that he changed his mind and said, oh, well, she was involved. And she has steadfastly maintained that she was not. So there is I wasn't present at the trial, but I can see that there were potential errors that could have been, or potential grounds for appeal that could have been brought. And if that had been her only means of preserving eligibility would have been to win, then she would have done that also. So there are things she would undo if she had the opportunity. But I think the government, again, is totally misreading Vardalus. Vardalus has nothing to do with individual actual reliance. If I can just quote one section here, it says, although not a necessary predicate for invoking the anti-retroactivity principle, the likelihood of reliance on prior law strengthens the case for reading a newly enacted law prospectively. It's not whether an individual relied. There was no evidence either that Vardalus relied. He may have relied. It was not in the record. It was not argued. And similarly in St. Cyr, as I noted before, it was clear that the person did not rely. So Vardalus is not saying that if you can show reliance, that goes into the calculus. Vardalus is saying that if you can show a likelihood of reliance, then that goes into the calculus, and there is that likelihood in this case. Now, Ponapula was these exact facts. It was an individual who went to trial and lost and asserted eligibility for 212C relief, and the Third Circuit found that the person was eligible. There's a huge multidimensional split on the role of reliance, and the Third Circuit was a leading case that said, no, you do not have to show reliance. It would be a strange presumption indeed if it required reliance.
You used the phrase likelihood of reliance, but likelihood might mean a probability or greater than 50%. Do you mean likelihood or do you mean just potential?
I think that they use both phrases in different places. I think that the likelihood can be a slight likelihood, it strengthens it, or it can be more than 50%. I don't think that the issue is clear as to, you know, how strong the likelihood has to be. That was one of the things that the court went into in St. Cyr, talking about the likelihood of relying on 212C relief in entering a guilty plea. Well, I would argue that the likelihood of reliance would be equally great in waiving appeal, because if you have been convicted of something that is going to preclude you from seeking relief and your only hope is to appeal it, then you're going to be just as likely as you would be in making that decision in whether or not to go to trial in the first place. And St. Cyr does not require or suggest individual reliance. St. Cyr is also, in our opinion, very clear that it is the potential, the possibility of reliance that is what is considered. And the expectation that one, you know, would have of not being mandatorily deported. And the fact that 20 years have now passed, there were only 3 years between the conviction in 1993 and the passage of IRA-IRA. So it's not like she sat on her rights for 20 years. And the court said in this prior case that was something that was entirely reasonable to do because you can gain equities during that time.
I know that your time has expired, but just a question. In your view, what effect do we give in this case to Landgraf?
I think that Vartelis builds on Landgraf. I think Landgraf is important. I don't think that there's anything inconsistent between Vartelis and Landgraf. And I think that the analysis, this is not a question of ossifying the law. This is a question, and the 212C issue being prospective was addressed in St. Cyr and rejected in St. Cyr. St. Cyr said, no, that's not, I mean, this is the exact same issue as St. Cyr with the difference that she went to trial. The grant of cert in St. Cyr was limited to people who pled guilty, so the court only examined people who pled guilty. We are not in any way undermining St. Cyr. They did not go into the calculus or the questions of, well, what about people who went to trial? So we are not undermining Landgraf in any way. We are not undermining St. Cyr in any way. We are clarifying that actual reliance cannot be required. And that's what happened in this court in the original case.
The government has acknowledged today that actual reliance cannot be required. They've said that
that's
two
correct.
Or three times. So, okay, you've answered my question. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. We have
Thank you.